It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
News Podcast presents Bret Baier's All-Star Panel.
America's got to be in the lead if you want to deal with these threats. We're going to lead.
The morning is over. The Shiva is done. And if you're a conservative, you should be optimistic.
You know, my main priority right now is making sure that it delivers for the American people.
We have to make our country great again, and I will do that.
I think the president gets criticized by people all the time for the stuff he says, by people who ignore what he does.
Now, Fox's chief political anchor, Bret Baier.
It was a Super Tuesday, unlike never before, where there were huge sweeps on both sides of the aisle. Not surprisingly, President Biden won almost every primary contest, though losing to a local candidate, entrepreneur Jason Palmer, in the America's Samoa Democratic caucuses. On the other hand, former President Donald Trump took home a victory in nearly all 15 primary contests, losing only in Vermont to his sole opponent, Nikki Haley. In his speech, the former president stayed focused on the general election.
November 5th is going to go down as the single most important day in the history of our country. USA! We're going to take it, and we're going to make it like it should be, respected.
As of Wednesday morning, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley has officially suspended her campaign, though she did not endorse the former president. Now both President Biden and former President Trump are working to woo Haley's supporters. To discuss all of this and more, we bring in our panel, former White House speechwriter Mark Thiessen, Fox News White House correspondent Peter Ducey, and Democratic strategist Leslie Marshall. Peter, the president, it's really a paper statement, but still making an effort to go after Haley voters, saying that former President Trump doesn't want you. We do.
And that is his beginning of an attempt to try to put together a coalition. Everything that we're learning on these primary nights is that Trump has no problems with the important parts of his base. President Biden has big problems with the important parts of his base. We're past deadlines that he came forward with for a ceasefire that progressives are really upset about, that progressives are writing uncommitted on ballots about. And so this is an admission. The way that they wrote that statement is an admission that they need either centrist Democrats or Republicans who don't like Trump to come into the tent and back Biden if they are going to win.
You know, Leslie, it's interesting, the thought that Republicans who have a problem with President Biden would somehow be wooed by President Biden to not vote for Donald Trump and to vote for him.
Actually, it's not that far-fetched when you look at the data thus far coming out of places like Virginia. 48% of Haley voters said that they would vote for Joe Biden, close to 48% approval rating of Haley voters for Joe Biden. That's higher than his national average. In Vermont, many Democrats voted for Joe Biden, and many Republicans who have no plan to vote for Donald Trump. And what they said basically is it was symbolic, very different than the general in the primary. They love their governor who supported Nikki Haley in the state of Vermont. And it's sort of like they're not going to vote for Trump. So I don't think it's that far-fetched that Joe Biden reach out to Haley voters, because there are a number of them that feel that Donald Trump is not the Republican or Republican Party that they want to be. They don't want the chaos. They don't like perhaps his stance and his ally's stance on reproductive rights. Nikki Haley, something I thought was brilliant that she said, and I thought she was right, that conservatives have to find a path and a way to be pro-life yet pro-woman. So I don't think it's that far-fetched that Biden reaches out, and he should, to try to appeal to those Haley voters, because with a race this close, that can put you over the finish line.
Mark, what about Nikki Haley's speech today in South Carolina? suspending her campaign but not endorsing the former president, how she framed that, and what does she want?
I'm not sure what she wants, but I think she probably should have endorsed him, and I think Trump should have probably been gracious to her. So it's just, I think it's emblematic of the Republican Party and the state of the party today that's how that all played out. But you know, I think if you look at our Fox voter analysis, the party is divided. I mean, in fact, Joe Biden has very, as Peter pointed out, has very real problems with his base. But Trump has real problems with his base if you count the base as the whole Republican Party. Our analysis shows that there's about 2/3 of the Republican voters consider themselves part of the MAGA wing, and about 1/3 say they're not part of the MAGA wing. They're not MAGA Republicans. And 53% of those people in Iowa said they're not voting for Trump, 65 in New Hampshire, 57 in South Carolina. Maybe they'll come home. You were asking a lot of people yesterday on the air about that. You know, aren't they going to all come home? It doesn't take a lot of them not to come home to cost them the election. He won in 2020 by 42,918 votes in 3 states. Nikki Haley got, I counted it up today, 2,873,491 votes in the primary so far. So, you know, that's a lot of votes that Donald Trump should be going after. Even if he can't get all of them, if he can get 1/3 of them, if he can get 1/2 of them, he should want every one of them and he should be trying to get them.
Yeah. So, Peter, is this the beginning of the general election campaign? I mean, do you get a sense that the Biden campaign is now, okay, here we go?
Yeah, totally. And it's good for them and it's bad for them, right? Like, they've got no primary competition to worry about. But now they are going to have to deal with questions about Donald Trump every day at the White House and at the campaign. And we saw this today. I was trying, now that the field is down to 2, I asked the press secretary if they can just commit to a debate already, because nobody is saying anything about these debates. And neither of these candidates have debated in 4 years. Trump skipped them. Biden didn't want to do them this time either, which an incumbent usually doesn't, but nobody debated, and they won't commit at the White House or at the campaign to one. But a couple minutes after I asked Karine about this, Trump got on Truth Social and he said, I'm calling for debates anytime, anywhere, any place, even if they're run by the Commission on Presidential Debates, which became the bad guy after the last cycle. The RNC voted not to work with them anymore. That's gone. They are trying to goad Biden into a debate. That is general election stuff. They are there now.
Leslie, one thing about running against Donald Trump when it comes to Democrats, it seems there is some segment of your party that loses its mind, that totally it just explodes with various things he says or does, and it almost takes them to a different place, and they do something or say something that then rebounds and causes the party or the candidate problems. Is that a fair circle there of a gerbil wheel that we see nonstop?
Are you talking about our basket of deplorables? Yeah.
I mean, list a lot of things. You could list
a
lot.
Yeah, you know, I just want to throw this in because this made me laugh. I read this yesterday that this matchup, Americans want this as much as they want a drug-free colonoscopy. And when you look at, you know, this rematch between the former president and the current president, it would be wise to Mark's point, and Mark, you and I agree today again.
All right.
Let's start keeping score, right? When you look at Donald Trump needs to go after every Nikki Haley voter, so does Joe Biden. You want the whole pie. You don't just want a piece of the pie, right? You want the 8 slices of the pizza pie there. You have to embrace them, and you have to show that you're going to unite the nation. You have to show that you are and will be again, or that you were and will be again, the president for all people. So to my party, leave the mudslinging to Donald Trump. He loves to do it. He does it well. And if anything, it just motivates some people who might stay on the couch to get up and vote for Donald Trump, who really love him and feel that he has it in the bag. He doesn't. It's very, very close. Again, you know, to Mark's point, you know, you're talking if Jill Stein gets 5% of the vote, depending on who you pull from, that could be the difference in who our president. That's how tight it is. We're talking about perhaps 5%, especially among independents, especially in those swing states when we're talking about the general. So I think it's important to stay on the issues and stay away from the personal attacks. I do like Michelle Obama's when they go low, we go high. I think it can work. And I think we got to go back to that.
Yes, but the question is can you get all of the pundits, all of the folks to stay on the sheet of music? Nancy Pelosi was able to do it legislatively, but it seems like, for example, on MSNBC, they had this segment about immigration being the number one issue in Virginia, and they laughed about it, saying, you know, that they couldn't believe it. And the former White House press secretary, Jen Psaki, said, I live there. It's not, you know, it's not an issue. It's all about racism. And I guess the disconnect, Mark, is what I'm getting at. And for the middle of the country, looking at that, listening to that, there are multiple events where that happens. And it seems like Donald Trump exclusively makes that happen, not only with never Trumpers in the Republican Party, but with people on the left.
First of all, they're living in a liberal bubble. And so they don't see what's happening in the rest of the country. So it doesn't surprise me that Jen Psaki doesn't feel the illegal immigration experience in Virginia. The family of that 14-year-old girl who was raped by an illegal migrant who was admitted under Joe Biden's open border policies certainly does. But, you know, I think you're going to see this on display tomorrow night in the State of the Union, because, you know, Joe Biden is going to stand up there and tell the American people, don't believe your lying eyes, don't believe your wallet. We've turned a corner. The economy is great. Things are fine. And you know, if you look at the polls, 43% plurality of Americans say the president's policies have hurt them personally. Only 18% say they've helped. So, you know, they don't think that Bidenomics is such a great thing. And you know, the folks in the White House look at that and say, I don't know what they're talking about. The, you know, inflation isn't growing as fast as it was. Things are working. It's like, well, when I started out under your presidency, we had the highest level of personal savings in American history because of all the pandemic, you know, spending. And now we have the highest level of personal debt, and credit card debt just hit $1 trillion. So I went from having money in my savings account to spending, to maxing out my credit card in order to cover inflation. And you're telling me everything's great. This is the challenge they face, and there's nothing really much they can do about it in a speech. They got to change the policies.
Panel, we'll hold it right there.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Peter, today you had former President Trump get to Truth Social. A lot of people said he should have said this in the speech last night as a soundbite, but he got to Truth Social today and said, it is important for the good of our country that Joe Biden and I debate issues that are so vital to America and the American people. Therefore, I am calling for debates anytime, anywhere, any place. The debates can be run by the corrupt DNC or their subsidiary, the Commission on Presidential Debates, CBD. I look forward to receiving a response. Thank you for your attention to this matter! Exclamation point. How will that sit with the Biden campaign? And what's your sense of whether the president will do debates or not?
Based on everything that I've heard and talking to everybody around at the White House, at the campaign, kind of just in this general Biden world that we live in, that I live in at least, it doesn't feel like it's ever going to happen. And you look, I was pulling this today. I mean, we know when and where they're going to be. September 16th, Texas State University. October 1st, Virginia State University. October 9th, University of Utah in Salt Lake City. They're going to have a VP debate in Easton, PA, if both sides commit. And it just doesn't seem like anybody sees an upside. And, you know, we don't have this for sure yet. But it seems like something the Biden campaign or the White House could say in the late summer, early fall is, well, Donald Trump didn't debate in his primary cycle. And so we're not going to debate. We're going to find other ways to. It's kind of like what they say when they defend not doing traditional media interviews. They say, well, we're going to voters where they are, on Instagram, on radio, on a podcast, whatever.
On Seth Meyers.
On Seth Meyers. And so I it seems like they are laying the groundwork to say they don't think the debates, the presidential debates, are the best way for them to reach who they need to reach.
But Leslie, that is just not going to fly. It's just not. People are going to go, wait a second. Come on. You didn't debate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You didn't debate Dean Phillips, just like an incumbent. Well, he was essentially an incumbent, former President Trump. And now there was a thought that he had a problem, the former president, with the Commission on Presidential Debates, and that the Republicans were going to pull away. Well, now he's committing to do debates. And isn't this going to be an issue that's essentially raises a red flag for the president's ability to deal with tough issues head to head?
I don't think so. I think the people that are going to say that and think that already are supporting Donald Trump or are not going to support Joe Biden, even if it's not going to be Donald Trump, which you certainly know it is. Look, I've been called a rule breaker many times in my life, but the reality is neither of these men right now is the Democratic or GOP nominee. Donald Trump will be, what, March 12th, 13th? The president will be on the 19th. After that, I think it's important to have the debates, but I have to say, in the last few election cycles, just when you look at the numbers, it doesn't really push the needle. And it doesn't really push the needle more specifically among independents. So a couple of things. Is that your strength, right? Is that your strength? You know, Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, you know, they were anxious to get out there. They're strong debaters. Joe Biden was with Paul Ryan. Will Joe Biden be with Donald Trump? And if not, you may want to skip it. But I think you have to have at least one debate, you know, between the former president and the current president. But again, at the end of the day, I think it does more for ratings of networks than it does to move the needle and get voters to vote for one or the other candidate enough in numbers that it would make a difference to put them over the finish line to their magic number in the general.
I don't know, Mark. I think that, and I guess I'm biased here because I'm a guy that looks at debates from a moderator's point of view. And, you know, I talked to Jim Lehrer before he passed, and we went to lunch numerous times. And I always thought he was the best at it, you know, being detached, let the moment between the two candidates develop. And so I thought that those debates had a significant impact. Now, whether it didn't move the needle tremendously in polls, it maybe, you know, informed voters. I think the biggest problem could potentially be that the debates are too late, that early voting has already started in a number of states, that people need to see the candidates deal with tough issues and how they're going to be different, what they're going to do before they start sending in their votes.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, no one's going to believe that Joe Biden, if he chooses not to debate, that it's not because he's too infirm to do it. It's going to be obvious to every person. There's no presidential candidate in history, no sitting incumbent president has eschewed debates just for.
I mean, can you see the ad that it quotes special counsel Herr that he wouldn't go to court because he'd be an old man with a bad memory? I mean, couldn't you see the ads?
Of course you can. Of course you can. And, you know, Biden is damned if he does, damned if he doesn't, because if he does show up, then everyone's going to see what Herr saw in that meeting. when you put Joe Biden in a situation where he has to answer questions for an hour and a half or so or longer, he doesn't do very well and he gets confused and he doesn't remember things. He's not the guy that he used to be. And so, and on one hand, he can't not debate. But on the other hand, he can't debate because he actually can't debate. If he's so great behind closed doors, like everybody's saying, let us see that guy. The best way to do it is to show us in a debate. I think, by the way, if they do have a debate, my advice to Donald Trump would be to not only do the presidential debates, but show up at the vice presidential debate and debate Herr too, because she's the real candidate. Because there is no way that Joe Biden, if he wins the second term, is going to be president for four more years.
Last thing, we'll wrap up here, Peter. Is there a sense heading into the State of the Union that this is going to be a different State of the Union, that the president's going to use this differently? Usually it's a shopping list of what he wants to get done. Clearly, are they going to spend some time hitting on the bipartisan Senate bill that included immigration, Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and the lack of action on that? But do we think that there's going to be executive actions or orders on the border issue?
No, because to go kind of in reverse order, it doesn't sound like there's going to be executive action, because they would rather talk about how no executive action on immigration would go as far as that bipartisan bill that they keep talking about, but is dead. It doesn't seem like this is going to be that different than a typical State of the Union, because they're talking about how they want to go look back at the last 3 years. Today, the first slide and kind of a preview that we got was about expanding access to the Affordable Care Act and jobs created since day one. So it feels like it's going to be more of a look back than a look forward. But if they know that, the folks that you talk to, they don't think that very many people in the electorate have been paying much attention. But if the one thing that bleeds through is that Biden might be too old or have acuity issues, then tomorrow he just needs to have a clean speech, well delivered. And so it probably matters less that the text is going to be prepared with the same guys who have helped him with the last State of the Unions. He did all of the prep. It sounds like exactly the same. The content will matter less than the delivery.
Leslie, last thing, when you get to the controversial issue of Israel, should he spend time on it? You wonder if maybe even some progressives are going to push back in that hall.
Yes, he should spend time on it, because it's the responsibility of the president to, inform us of, what's going on. I know in some interviews lately, recently, the president said, like with The New Yorker, that, he felt his strength was, working with Netanyahu behind, closed doors. And we know that there was a concern about what was going to happen in Michigan before it happened, because the Biden administration sent people to speak to those in the Muslim community and to hear them out. By the way, that 100,000 votes was the result of a loss of two delegates in that state. So the numbers of uncommitted and the fanfare, didn't, hurt the president of that state, at least in the primary. But, he needs to outline, obviously he can't show his hands when you're talking about foreign policy. You're talking about terrorists. You're talking about hostages. You're talking about a potential ceasefire. But what his plan is, what his hope is, and, that's going to appease people. There are people that are so angry they are going to sit on the couch, who have wanted a ceasefire, and who feel that Biden did too much for Israel and hadn't, pushed Netanyahu to sit down for a ceasefire, if only temporarily, that it's long overdue and it's too little too late. Anything he says, that's not going to, change that. But yes, he absolutely needs to touch upon that. And just quickly to Peter's point, I would agree with what Peter said. I think there's going to be a lot of people. I think tomorrow, not just what he says, but how he says it, is really going to matter, because that's what people are watching: the mental acuity, the vibrance, the physical stamina, that type of stuff. As a matter of fact, I think more people left and right are going to be watching and be critical of that more so than what he says. But he can't ignore speaking about Israel and Gaza. It just can't. It's too big an issue.
All right, panel, thank you. Now, in honor of President Biden's third State of the Union address, here's a bit of State of the Union history. Originally referred to as the annual message, the State of the Union speech wasn't always that. In fact, for over a century, it was delivered to Congress in writing. Though George Washington and John Adams had the gift of gab when it came to addressing the people, Thomas Jefferson did not, which was why he decided to give his annual address through a written message. Oddly enough, this method was used from the days of Jefferson up until 1913, when Woodrow Wilson came into office and revived the spoken State of the Union address. That'll do it for this week. You can hear more of this series at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and a review. We want to hear from you. For Mark, Peter, and Leslie, I'm Brett Baer. We'll see you next time. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.